Hello, Legion of Audience. This is James, and before we get started today, I wanted to take a second and let you all know about the brand new Who Would Win Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get behind-the-scenes access like you've never seen before, go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Who Would Win patrons will have access to outtake videos, early info on battles, and even get a vote on characters that we'll use in upcoming episodes. So if you'd like to support me and the show, head to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow, and for as little as $5 a month, you can define yourself as more than just a fan. You'll be an official member of the Legion. Hope to see you there.
It is after hours at the Hall of Presidents. No people are in sight. President George Washington removes his dentures, relieving him slightly from the pain that they cause. Slinking down into a nearby chair, Washington considers how he will spend the rest of his night. It is then that an imposing figure looms over him. A palm reaches out and swats the false teeth from his hand. Washington immediately leaps to his feet and is standing toe-to-toe with Abraham Lincoln, snarling back at him. I'm tired of people calling you the father of our country. You didn't even have any kids of your own, Abe bellows. It's time we settle this once and for all, Lincoln. I'm weary of your face. The two presidents square off, and the White House is about to turn red. It's the American Cincinnatus versus the Great Emancipator. It's General George versus Honest Abe. It's Abraham Lincoln versus George Washington today on Who Would Win.
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gavsey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ray Stecanus. You know, Ray, today's matchup is important for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, it's because it's election time. And number two, what many people don't know is that this exact matchup, the one we're going over today, was actually the matchup, the battle that started it all. Would you like to explain this to everybody?
I could absolutely explain this to everybody. Hi, kids at home. This is Ray, your hero. Hashtag awkward allies. I'm looking at you. What started with this is when I originally was going to be brought on to or approached to do the show. We had a face-to-face encounter with a producer, and we were put on the spot without any preparation whatsoever. The producer said, "Hey, I want to see a sample battle between you two to see kind of how you gel, how you work." And the battle that was come up with in the moment was Abraham Lincoln versus George Washington. I had George Washington. You had Abraham Lincoln. And we just did two full rounds with rebuttals before the judge finally said, or the producer finally said, "Okay, guys, I think we've seen enough. We see the potential here." And I thought that was absolutely great. So this is a chance. This is historical, not just American historical. Who Would Win historical? How about that?
You know, I remember that day very well, meeting you for the first time. And of course, you want to make sure that, you know, a co-host is really going to be stepping up to the plate. I mean, we moved the whole production to L.A. This was like, we're kind of launching the show in a big way. And it was at, what was the restaurant called,
Ray? It was the Habit Burger in Woodland Hills, California.
A masterful. Free plug. Amazing place. So I don't know if you remember, we're sitting there with the producer and we're like, we're put on the spot. You came up with a point. I countered. I came up with my point. Do you remember how many people started listening in to our debate?
There were at least five tables listening in to us from all around the entire. And we were trying to set ourselves up in the corner away from everybody. But people were just like into it and having a good time. And that's when I was like, you know, this is a thing I think could happen.
It was really cool. I had an immediate, you know, kind of adversarial feeling towards you, which I thought was perfect. But I could tell that you had that fire. You know, all joking aside, I couldn't have asked for a better, co-host or, you know, co-main event type of person to be on the show. But the problem is, you know, Ray, something's been bugging me ever since that battle. We never finished it. So when we start talking about what show should we do, you know, for this kind of crazy time we're living through right now, and the production team said, well, there's this matchup that never got resolved. How fast did you and I jump on this opportunity?
They didn't even finish the sentence before I was like, in. I would love to do that immediately. I'm here for it. I'm ready for it. Let's do it. I'm excited for it.
You know, we do the Google test, right, where you type in, you know, this character versus this character, and I kind of see how many people have talked about. Hopefully, no one has. Unfortunately, Everyone's talked about this matchup, but I don't think people have ever done it the way you and I will do it in terms of our approach.
I guarantee it.
You know, when you have a matchup like this, look, we've got access to amazing actors and what have you, but you've got to bring on, you've got to bring on someone who's not only an amazing actor, who's not only super talented, but knows Ray and I and knows how to kind of keep us under control and has a proven track record of being on the Who Would Win show in such a way where they give really great judgments. Where Ray and I, at the end of the day, were like, okay, I can see their logic and we're good with it. So we had no choice. We had to bring this person back on, making another appearance on the Who Would Win show. You know him from his many appearances on the show called The Middle and on Jimmy Kimmel. And of course, I kind of think he should have been on Saturday Night Live for 10 years because he's that awesome. You can now see him back in Rochester, New York. It's the one, it's the only, it's Tommy Bechtel. Tommy, thank you for coming back onto the Who Would Win show.
It's great to be back. I love being here, listening to these compelling arguments and making fair and correct decisions with my friends. So it's a pleasure to be here.
You know, Tommy, you've been a fan favorite as a judge for Who Would Win for quite some time. What do you think, you know, you bring to the show that is so different from other judges?
Well, you know, for me, it's a complete fear of conflict. It's, as I've said on the show before, growing up in a tumultuous house with fighting parents has made me shy away from two people who raise their voices, particularly adults. So sitting in the pocket and listening to two men argue with one another in a civil way is not only cathartic, it also helps me grow as a person. So I take that opportunity and I build on it and I better myself. And I think, what does the audience need from me now that I'm getting from these two gentlemen? And I use that. I use it all to create what I like to think is a thoughtful opinion. And again, it is just an opinion, but it is final and it is correct.
Ray, when was the last time someone called you a gentleman?
Oh, it happens on the reg. Look, I make everyone around me call me a gentleman because that's truly what I am, a distinguished gentleman.
Mm. Now, Tommy, you're back in Rochester, you know, via L.A. What's going on in Rochester these days? Why are you deciding to grace Rochester with your presence?
You know, I always say follow the action. No, I'm kidding. You know, well, things are a little topsy-turvy. I am able to record all of my auditions, you know, on a camera and send them in just as easily as I would in L.A. So I'm taking this time before I think the country is going to come roaring back in the winter and spring. I'm hoping. I'm optimistic. So I am taking this time to spend time with my family. And, you know, the reality is when you are trying to grind it out as a day player actor, you have to be available all the time in L.A. So it's never going to be like this again. And this is certainly, we've been handed lemons. So this is my attempt to make lemonade out of it and spend some time with my family. So that's my not funny answer.
You know, that's a good answer, by the way. Spending time with your family is always a great thing. Tommy, by the way, this is normally where I slip an envelope to someone if we were in studio together, or I have an envelope of money around.
Is that why my Venmo
house
just lit up? Oh, wait. Yes. Very generous.
I'm actually reversing Venmoing money from your account.
Oh, no.
That was a request.
But real quick, before we go any further, Tommy, you can tell the truth to these people. The reason you're actually in Rochester, New York right now is because the Buffalo Bills are actually good this season.
That's right. And they might need me to work security at a game or something, even though we can't have fans. Maybe I could show up. Maybe I could be Billy the Buffalo.
What easier way to sneak on the field as a mascot? Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I see you as a quarterback. Yeah. I see you as the quarterback the Bills need.
It's it could be. You know, I am a scrambler for sure. Yeah.
Before I was so rudely interrupted by Ray, I was going to say, you know, instead of bribing you right now, I want to reverse bribe you, which means you send me something. Can you send me some ice cream from Carvel? Like Carvel's ice cream?
Yes. I gotta get some dry ice. Yes, no problem.
That's a you problem, but yeah, just send it my way, and that'd be great. Thank you.
No problem.
Cool.
It's in the mail.
All right. Now, Tommy, do you have any questions about these two characters, two historical figures, really, that we'll be debating today? Any confusion on your part? Is there anything we can clarify before we get started?
Should I take Daniel Day-Lewis's audio performance of Abraham Lincoln as the accepted voice of Lincoln in this debate? Like, will he be doing that now voice to George Washington when they're commencing the fighting? Should I be picturing Day-Lewis Lincoln, or just I'm trying to get in the headspace for this.
Yes, to the all the above.
Great.
The answer is always milkshake guy.
Tommy, look, we are super excited to have you here, but really, it's about that time. Ray, please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
Representing American history, the president who had trouble sleeping because he didn't know how to lie, George Washington. And also representing American history, the president who tarnished the South worse than country music ever could, Abraham Lincoln. Take that most popular form of music in the United States. Your day of the sun is over.
Way to make friends, Ray. Now, before we go any further, let's go over the new and improved official rules of a Who Would Win match. Now, rule number one, each debater will make 3 points. Rule number two, the Who Would Win match is a random encounter in a neutral location with no prior knowledge of the opponent or time to prepare for the fight. Now, rule number three, the debater must stay within the confines of the character's personality, and the exact version of that character has to be specifically stated. Ray, I'm just going to speak on, I think we already talked about this, we're using the historical figures, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, I think we're good to go.
Historical George Washington for me, James.
Fair enough. I'll do the same thing with Abraham Lincoln. Rule number four, debaters may only use examples of skills, powers, or weapons for historical figures that are a long-established part of the character's continuity. Feats from non-canon crossovers are allowed, but will be given less weight. Rule number five, the winner of the debate is whomever the judge decides has the best case for defeating their opponent by death, submission, or battlefield removal. And rule number six, the judge is the final arbiter and can disallow or veto any point they feel violates these rules or established logic. Now, feel free to check out the official rules on our website, whowouldwinshow.com.
The next chapter in the New York Times best-selling Last Kids on Earth series is here in The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. If you didn't know, The Last Kids on Earth is a graphic novel series from authors Max Brallier and Joshua Pruitt, where 13-year-old Jack Sullivan survives the zombie apocalypse in what's been called The Walking Dead meets The Simpsons. Yeah, you get it. It's bright, it's fun, and it's got an art style all its own. It's crazy. Now, in The Last Comics on Earth, our band of heroes are hard at work creating their own sequel, which of course is going to be bigger and crazier than anything ever seen before. I mean, we got supervillains, we got monsters, heck, we got a kaiju with a car head and hamburger feet who's named Steve. Yeah, this book has it all, and it carries the important Who Would Win Show stamp of approval. So if you'd like to check out this new book that also has a spin-off Netflix series, might I add, then let's make it happen. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com and learn more.
And now let's get to the tale of the tape for both of our combatants. Today's tale of the tape is brought to you, as always, the official Who Would Win store. Get your official Who Would Win t-shirts, mugs, and merchandise by going to whowouldwinshow.com and clicking on the merch section. Ray, please give us the details on George Washington.
George Washington was an American general turned first president of the United States. He was born in 1732 and died in December of 1799. Just missed it. Washington originally fought under the British, but come the Revolutionary War, he took control of his army and took it to the British forces in victory after victory, eventually capturing General Cornwallis at Yorktown and effectively ending the war with victory. After leading the effort to build the American government as the transition team leader, Washington was named first president and served two terms until deciding that he was done and not seeking a third one. Fun fact, we know about Washington's successes during the Revolutionary War, but did you know that an early failure of his led to a global conflict? Yes, early in his career as a general, Washington led an attack on the French in the Ohio Valley. A French nobleman was killed in this skirmish, and the event became the match that lit the fuse of the French and Indian War, which later escalated globally as the Seven Years' War. Oopsie! He later learned who not to kill at a certain point in the future, though. So he got some better results as he went along. That is George Washington.
We all make mistakes, Ray.
Oopsies.
We all make mistakes. Here are the details for Abraham Lincoln. Now, Lincoln first appeared on February 12, 1809, and was created by his parents, Nancy and Thomas Lincoln, in a one-room log cabin in Hardin County, Kentucky. I'm trying to make him sound very comic bookish. Lincoln's youth was rough, with his former schooling limited to three brief periods in local schools, as he had to work constantly to support his family. His lack of education didn't stop him, though, as he taught himself law and passed the bar examination in 1836. After a career as a lawyer, Abraham Lincoln was elected 16th President of the United States in November 1860, shortly before the outbreak of the Civil War. Lincoln proved to be a shrewd military strategist and a savvy leader. His Emancipation Proclamation paved the way for slavery's abolition, while his Gettysburg Address stands as one of the most famous pieces of oratory in American history. In April 1865, with the Union on the brink of victory, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated by Confederate sympathizer John Wilkes Booth. Now, Lincoln's assassination, however, made him a martyr to the cause of liberty, and he is widely regarded as one of the greatest presidents in U.S. history. And here's an interesting fact about Abraham Lincoln. Did you know that he personally test-fired guns outside the White House? It's true. Lincoln was a hands-on commander-in-chief who, given his passion for gadgetry, was keenly interested in the artillery used by his Union troops during the Civil War. Lincoln attended artillery and cannon tests and met at the White House with inventors demonstrating military prototypes. Although there was a standing order against firing weapons in the District of Columbia, Lincoln even test-fired muskets and repeating rifles on the grassy expanses around the White House, now known as the Ellipse and the National Mall. And now you have the facts on both opponents. Tommy, do you have any questions before we get started?
Oh, no. I am very excited. I love U.S. history. I love the wealth of knowledge that is about to be poured upon me. I am but a meager baked potato. Cheese sauce me, boys.
I just can't believe that I'm just now picturing Abraham Lincoln as Tony Stark from that first Iron Man movie, just blowing up the hillside around him from the White House lawn. Yes, and I love it. I don't ever want that image to go away.
I was actually, it's cool you said that. I was actually picturing more as a Batman Bruce Wayne type with like gadgetry and things and explode, you know, both work, by the way, both work. All right, Ray, this is going to be an insanely fun battle. We couldn't be picking a better time to do it. Please go ahead and hit us with your point number one.
Point number one for George Washington. I want to talk a little bit about the fact that he was a general in the army. Now, one of these people, one of these human beings in this particular fight, was an army man who got full training under the British soldiers and then later went on to train men of his own, much like a Captain America type. He had to take kind of the rabble and all of the kind of the poor people, let's keep it real, that he had to conscript into his army. They used to go town to town and say, give me 10 bucks or you have to join the army. That used to be the rule. So you got a lot of poor people in there who didn't want to be there, and it was his job to make them into a fighting force. Now, in order to teach fighting, you have to understand fighting. And George Washington, as a general, understood fighting. You know, often he would ride into battle on his horse, carrying his sword, getting ready to go on there. And I see no reason why General George Washington isn't riding a horse with a big saber as he comes into this battle. And again, one of these men is a general of the army. The other is a lawyer. And I'm not going to say lawyers aren't tough, but they're definitely not trained in militaristic combat the way, I don't know, a general is, all right? He was commander of the Virginia militia, Washington was, at the age of 19. This is his entire life spent doing military stuff, mainly because he was kind of bored. He was a land surveyor before that. He didn't really enjoy it very much. He said, oh, I want to go fight people. That sounds more fun. He got his first generalship at the age of 22. So obviously, other than the fact that he came from a rich family, maybe that had something to do with it, but he obviously showed promise in one way or another to show that the people around him should follow him at the age of 22. At the age of 22, I was worried about selling people lasagnas in a restaurant. I wasn't worrying about commanding 3,000 troops and taking them to die. This guy is a born leader. He's got nerves of steel. Not just that. He also survived a heck of a lot for being, let's face it, anything could kill you back in the 1700s. Here is the list of things that didn't kill George Washington that he got. Diphtheria, tuberculosis, smallpox, malaria, dysentery, quinsy, carbuncle, pneumonia, and in one particular battle, he had two horses that he was riding shot out from underneath him. Often that means you're going to have the horse fall on you and you're going to break and you're going to die. He had two horses in one battle and he was fine. He walked away from it. Not just that, same battle. He had four bullets come close enough to his body that they actually punctured his clothing but did not hit him. his literally, maybe, and we don't know this for a fact, but it's possible that George Washington had some sort of Luke Cage thing going on. That's the only other time I could think about. And maybe bullets just don't penetrate his skin because he was never shot. I don't think Abraham Lincoln can say the same thing. Last thing I want to point out here is the fact that Washington, as great a general as he was, and the way he captured Cornwallis was amazing. But he was a greater spy master. He was really into the art of getting information. So when it comes to observing things and it comes to information and using it to your advantage, the fact that Washington was a great spy master, in my mind, puts him another step higher intelligence-wise in this battle. And that's my point number one.
Wow. Okay. Lots to discuss, Ray. Quick question. If you took the leading military general, leader, if you will,
sure,
of today, and put them in an unexpected fight with the top MMA champion in the world, who do you think wins?
Well, do I have a horse and a sword? Because then I'm pretty sure I do.
Yeah, I don't think so. Now, here's the other thing, too. You said George Washington may have Luke Cage-like skin. Did I hear that correctly?
We don't know. It's possible. He got shot four times. Pierced the clothes. Didn't pierce him.
Okay. Pretty sure he wasn't invulnerable to bullets. I went over American history, especially what have you, quite a bit. I don't remember that. Interesting point,
Ray. You
know,
mutant powers weren't always talked about in the 1700s, James.
That's true. They were not. Although witches and like that kind of stuff was, so you never know. Okay, now is there a difference in how you fight someone in a military conflict versus how you would fight someone in a one-on-one unexpected encounter? Yes or no? What do you think?
No, not even a little bit. If you're military, you're military and you win. That's what I learned.
That's right, Ray. There's a big difference. So when you have tactics within a military setting, you've got, you know, it's like the samurai, for example, had these tactics where they had to kind of be cognizant of what was around them at all times, you know, so they could, extend their sword, pull out their swords, do what they had to do, not hit any of their, people on their side. Soldiers of that time period also had to be very aware, had to stay within their lane, so to speak, especially when firing muskets or what have you. So this is a kind of a different conflict. Now, George Washington, you can't take anything away from, you know, the first president of the United States, amazing military leader, absolutely. But when it comes to a one-on-one encounter or fight, this is not his lane. This is not his thing. But I'll talk more about that later. Let me get to my point number one. See, unlike George Washington, Abraham Lincoln was 100% self-made. So, you know, again, Abe Lincoln was born in a one-room log cabin and really had a really harsh life from the get-go. He had the equivalent of 12 months worth of formal education between the ages of 7 and 21. And despite all of that, he put his mind to it and learned everything he needed to on his own. According to historians, Lincoln, by the way, this is just going to show you who he was, dressed as an ordinary boy from a poor backwoods family with a gap between his shoes, socks, and pants that often exposed 6 more inches of his skin. His lack of interest in his personal attire continues as an adult. You know, when Lincoln lived in New Salem, Illinois, he frequently appeared with a single suspender and no vest or coat. That's who he was. And yet somehow he went from the poorhouse to the White House. Let me explain. So, you know, he had his early life summed up in a quote from Thomas Gray's. It was called The Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard. His life was the Short and Simple Annals of the Poor. And, you know, by the way, on a side note, Lincoln became an expert with an axe during this time. And there's this historian, John Locke Scripps. He wrote this in 1860. He says, the erection of a house and the felling of a forest was the first work to be done. He's talking about Abraham Lincoln. Abraham was young to engage in such labor, but he was large of his age, stalwart, and willing to work. An axe was at once placed in his hands, and from that time until he attained his 23rd year, when not employed in labor on the farm, he was almost constantly wielding that most useful implement. And do you know how old he was when he first got that axe and started chopping down trees, building houses, and becoming a badass? He was 8. 8. On top of all, but again, comes from this back level, this backwards town, born in a one-room cabin. Did any of that stop him? No, of course not. So because whatever he needed to learn, he figured it out on his own. So for example, as you mentioned before, he studied law on his own without going to school for it and became a successful lawyer. Intellectually, Lincoln was more EQ than IQ, although I'm pretty sure he had high levels in both. And throughout all this time, Lincoln was still the hardworking, axe-wielding farmhand who didn't mind getting his hands dirty. He worked till he became a lawyer. He became a politician. He bought a German-based German language newspaper because, you know, why not? You know, Lincoln had none of the wealthy lifestyle, education, and opportunities that George Washington did. None of them. But through sheer will, tenacity, and a superhuman work ethic, Lincoln let nothing stop him. And despite all of his hardships, his mother dying, his stepmother dying, his kids dying, Lincoln stopped at nothing to get where he was and achieve what he did. As great as George Washington was, he didn't have to go through nearly the amount of hardships Lincoln had to experience. That's a fact. When you put a man of privilege against a man who literally fought like hell to get from the bottom of society to the presidency, well, my money's on the person who fought like hell. That's my point number one.
So, James, what I hear you saying is the reason why Lincoln should win this physical confrontation is because he was smart and became a lawyer. Like, that's fantastic, and that's great for him as far as a job goes, as far as a career goes. Great job, Honest Abe. But as far as actually fighting goes, I'm sorry, he had very little, if no, physical training in the forms of combat. I mean, there is what you just presented to me. I brought up an entire military background with one of the greatest militaries of that time in the world. The British Army at the time was known as sort of like they took over the world. Basically, the sun never sets on the British Empire is something we're all kind of familiar with. Washington trained under all of that stuff. And the truth is, he wanted to join the British Army as a real general, except they were like, you're a dumb American. Why would we ever have you? And when you talk about overcoming, that put a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And he said, okay, I'm going to get a bunch of my dumb Americans together and we're going to beat the living heck out of all of you and get you out of our country not too much longer later. Again, military training versus a guy who, a farm boy with an axe. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take the Navy SEAL over a hillbilly Jim any day of the week, James.
It's just funny in this particular regard. George Washington reminds me of someone who kind of, you know, started with a very wealthy, you know, upbringing and then kind of, you know, leveraged it in strategic ways to then, you know, get to different places, you know, higher places in his life. But he did start at a really good level. He didn't have to fight his way through hell to get there. That's the difference between these two characters. All right, now, or these two presidents, I should say. Tommy, you've heard points number one from Ray and myself. Where's your head at right now?
Well, my head is, as it usually is after round one, I am torn. I'm a little torn here. First of all, I like learning that Lincoln didn't have a lot of formal education. I myself barely attended school and before leaving for a life of success and fame and fortune in Los Angeles. I attended a community college for a semester and a regular college for a time, but never a degree. So that gave me an empathetic link with Lincoln there, pardon the pun. But George was a badass. George had all of the military training, by all accounts, I've never served, but by the people, the friends I have who have served, that if you have not served combat, you simply don't have the instincts and survival, will to survive, that people who are in the military have, that have seen active duty and have seen combat. So right now, I definitely am, I'm a fan of both men, but I guess I have to say right now, slight edge to George Washington. Slight edge.
That's correct. That is the only correct thing to say right there.
All right, Ray. Now, remember, George Abraham Lincoln did have, you know, was part of the military for a short time. But with that being said, he has nowhere near the military experience as George Washington. I can't deny that whatsoever. Ray, we're off to a good start. Hit me with your point number two.
Point number two. Now, we've talked a little bit about the fact that George Washington was a great military. Now, he had some earlier in his career, especially, like he made some bad decisions with the starting the French and Indian War and then starting the Seven Years' War. Kind of an oopsie moment right there. But it was done through violence. Through violence he was not supposed to do. You're not supposed to kill the rich people in the battles back then. You're only supposed to kill the poors. And he made the cardinal sin of killing the rich leader. No, you let them go. That every single time. What are we talking about right now? But the thing that I loved about George Washington, learning about him for this battle, is he went for it. That just because he made a bad decision here and took out the people didn't stop him. Because back then in the ways of war, when it hit wintertime, especially in the northeast Atlantic region of the United States, when the snow started falling, the war ended until the spring. Literally, everybody and the soldiers and everything went home, and they just hung out somewhere, and they just partied, and probably just like drank a lot, and high-fived each other up until the point where the spring starts. They put back on their soldier gear, and then they go back out and meet in the field and go have some more war. That's just what people did. So George Washington said, "That's fabulous." He's over there. This is where the crossing of the Delaware happens. It was never done. There was a German mercenary unit known as the Hessians. And there were, I think, 1,500 of them stationed over in the eastern part of the United States. And Washington said, these guys are going to be a real problem come the spring. Let's do some poop. So George Washington crossed the Delaware with a big group of his own men and army. He was able to keep them together. The sheer frigid cold temperatures of trying to do that, like the physicality it just takes to get a boat of humans across the river without freezing to death, is superhuman in its own way. Some would say he's comparable to Mr. Freeze in that particular example right there, with him being able to survive these subarctic temperatures. He was able to go over there, and when on Christmas Day, when you are not supposed to attack the enemy, he attacked the Hessians and took 800 of them hostage. He took 800 people hostage, and these are like mercenaries. This is Blackwater dudes coming from Germany. So he was able to break the rules, and this is where I'm really trying to come down to. There are certain gentlemanly rules of combat at the time, and George Washington said, to heck with that. I'm going to win this fight. I'm not going to wait till spring and get my butt kicked. So if it comes to being a moment where one of them has to quote-unquote go there, James, I hear you talking about this a lot. When it comes to having to go there, Washington is the guy who will go there. He will win. He must win. His life depends on him winning. The other little thing I wanted to put out here is a mild crossover, but I think it's important because there was a TV pilot back in 1992, and it was called 1775, and it was an American pilot in the style of the Rowan Atkinson Black Adder television show. It was a comedy, kind of a loopy, fun comedy involving historical figures, and George Washington was a character on that show. Who played George Washington? None other than Adam West. Adam West played George Washington in this one-episode pilot of 1775. Adam West famously, of course, played Batman in the 1960s. So you can see why, when you're actually trying to portray George Washington on screen, the only actor appropriate to do so is literally Batman. So when you think of George Washington, I think you should think of Adam West. You should think of Batman. Definitely compare him to Batman, Tommy, as much as you possibly can.
I can't unsee it now. Can't unsee it.
And when George Washington punches Abraham Lincoln, a big cartoon pow should appear over his head. I want you to keep that in mind, and that's my point number two.
Biff. Snap. Pow. Yeah. Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Okay. Hold on. So first of all, you said George Washington beats Abraham Lincoln because George Washington can survive a harsh winter and take a boat over the Delaware.
He survived a lot, James. Absolutely. Oh, those frigid temperatures were no joke. In fact, that same winter, I believe it was 250 American soldiers just died because it was just cold. Like, that's just how we lived back then. So the fact that Washington went out on the water, this is superhuman stuff. It's incredible.
It's crazy. I get it. They didn't have a lot of antibiotics and, you know, medicine.
I would say none.
And cuts. Right. Yeah. Or any of that. Right. But, I I'm from Canada. That's what we call like a Tuesday. That's not superhuman. That's just, you know, I hope they dress warmer. Also, you said you compared him to Mr. Freeze. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah. So well, they're both known for surviving very cold temperatures. Yeah, I think that's fair.
So first you're saying he's Luke Cage.
It might be.
Bullets can't do anything, and we don't know. And now you're comparing him to Mr. Freeze. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the power armor per se that we know of. Maybe that's what was stopping the bullets. I don't know.
And then my favorite part about all this is that George Washington beats Abraham Lincoln because in a TV show, George Washington was played by the amazing Adam West. Is that correct? That's why Washington beats Abraham Lincoln.
When you go to cast George Washington in a loopy sitcom pilot, even then, you have to cast Batman. Like, that's just the only choice you have.
Okay, so you got to remember, I think it was rule number three, you got to stay within the confines of the character. And this isn't even a crossover. This is just like a TV thing that happened.
That was the character of real George Washington, James.
I
got
to go to the judge on this. Tommy, you're cool with this point?
You know, I see what you're saying, James. But when it comes to Adam West, the spirit that he embodies is very similar to the spirit of Washington, and who's to say that he's not a reincarnated George Washington?
Thank you.
We really can't disprove that, so I'm going to allow it.
Thank you. Thank you, Tommy.
Wait, you said Adam West has the spirit of George Washington? Okay.
We don't know for sure that he was not a reincarnated being that was once George Washington. We don't
Tommy,
know.
That's reading between the lines of my point, and like, I'm glad when I can put something up there, you're a judge smart enough to pick it up and run with it.
Yes. Wow.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Let me just go to my point number two, and this is going to clarify a lot. And this is a point that really speaks to my heart. I'm going to use math. And so Ray, I'll speak slower. My point number two is called...
I'm already lost.
That's right. It's called 301.
Mm.
Yeah. So, look, physically speaking, George Washington, he wasn't a small guy, but he was smaller than Abraham Lincoln. I think George Washington was 6'2 and 175 pounds. Not too big by today's standards, tall. Mm. But back then, I'm sure that was massive. Of course, Abraham Lincoln was 6'4 and weighed 210 pounds. He'd be a legit, on the lighter side, but a legit heavyweight in the UFC. Mm. Now, keep in mind for this battle, it pits someone who started using an axe at the age of 8 versus someone who had a set of fake teeth. Remember, George Washington began losing teeth as early as his 20s, and he was forced to wear like several sets of these really weird looking dentures that were also very painful to him for him to use. They actually had springs that he had to press down on and then let open for him to actually talk properly and do all these crazy stuff. Wow. And his dentures weren't made of wood either. They were made out of like different combinations of rare hippopotamus ivory. Metal fasteners, and this is really horrible, human teeth. By the way, this just makes me wonder how well he could take a punch to the jaw. Actually, I'm not wondering. The answer is not well. That's why when he does all these crazy, amazing military feats, he's not alone. It's not himself doing it one-on-one. It's not a smart thing to do. He has his military with him. But on a one-on-one encounter, things are not going to go well for him. Now, Abraham Lincoln, he was many things. And one of them was being a great fighter. He was so great that his record is thought by historians to be 300 wins and one loss. But the loss has like an asterisk beside it because it wasn't like he got pinned or submitted. He got thrown to the ground and someone counted that as a win. So I'm not even sure it's a true loss. Yeah, it's crazy. So before he like steps into the political arena, he becomes like before he becomes a president, he was a wrestler on the American frontier. And wrestling was very different back then. Wasn't WWE pro wrestling. It wasn't even collegiate wrestling. It was really it was fighting. It was pure fighting. It was crazy. So he was known as a really good grappler. He was known as being super strong. He was known as a very fast thinker in a fight. He could see an opening, go for it. He knew how to maneuver his opponents into wherever he wanted to. He actually also won his county's wrestling championship at a really young age. He was just a natural fighter. He was that good. And what's really cool about this is he was also evidently a really good trash talker and knew how to psychologically mess with his opponents before a fight. After one victory, Lincoln looked at the crowd and yelled, and I'm quoting this, of course, "I'm the big buck of this lick. If any of you want to try it, come on and wet your horns." Doesn't really mean a lot to me right now, but I'm sure that was insane trash talk back in the day. And this was so threatening to the people that were there, the everyone in attendance. And he then said, okay, who's next? Who wants to try something? No one stepped up. A whole bunch of people came to watch him fight and then to challenge him. He trash talks. No one steps up to fight him. He was that good. Now, he had one famous match against this person named Jack Armstrong. This is really cool. And Jack Armstrong was a member of a local gang called the Clary's Grove Boys. And Jack Armstrong heard these stories about this guy Lincoln, how strong he was, how good of a fighter was. And he heard this from who was Lincoln's boss at the time. So he goes out and he challenges Abraham Lincoln to a fight. And the crowd's gathered and people are placing bets. And when the fight was over, Lincoln kicked his ass, but not just in a normal way. So they start fighting, right? And everyone's there. They're doing the wrestling. They're fighting kind of, you know, the way they have to. Armstrong starts doing some dirty stuff, like, you know, hitting him different ways, what have you. So instead of just hitting him back, Lincoln got so angry, legend has it, he just stopped fighting, grabbed Armstrong by the throat, and starts throttling him, like shaking him back and forth, tosses him on the ground, stands over him, and says, "What now?" Armstrong gave up, right? He then turns to the crowd, challenges the crowd, challenges every member of his gang to a fight, saying, "Come on, what are you going to do now?" None of them stepped up. They all said, "We don't want to fight you." Armstrong was so humiliated, and by the way, taken aback by Lincoln, he got up, apologized, shook Lincoln's hand and said, "I'm really sorry," and said, I admit, you're the better fighter. Like,
wow.
Yeah, Lincoln is that much of a badass. On a side note, he was so good that he was inducted, I think it was 1992, into the, it was called the Outstanding American Wing of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. And on a really cool side note, the wrestling style of Abraham Lincoln used was morphed into what was called catch-as-catch-can wrestling. It was actually kind of combined with this cool English style of wrestling. And then that morphed into what was called no-holds-barred. And no-holds-barred was what the UFC referred to as MMA before MMA was a thing, right? Mm. That's how badass of a fighter Lincoln was. He was like one of the forefathers of modern-day MMA. So against a great military leader with fake teeth versus someone with a record of 301 who could trash talk and make people afraid of him by, you know, yelling at them. Yeah, I'm going to go with a person with a 301 record. That's my point number two.
Oh, James, it's so adorable that you think that the professional wrestling of yesteryear was completely different than the professional wrestling of today. It's adorable that you think that. And by that, of course, I mean completely legitimate and an obvious test of skill between two wrestling combatants. Sure, James, the fact that he kept beating people and then shouting at the crowd, you know, you draw your own conclusions from a lot of this stuff. Let's just say he got the name Honest Abe because he played what they call in the industry a face. And he was a good guy wrestler who won many matches, much like Hulk Hogan of the 1980s. That's all I want to say about that. I wish that line about the, you know, the dipping, what was it, dips in horns? I wish I had that when I was in the ring.
He's the big buck of this lake who wants to dip their horn.
Yeah, I wish I had that line handy when I was in the ring a few years ago, because I would have shouted that every match and it would have gone over like crazy. Mm. You talk about the dentures. The dentures were obviously very, very painful. Yeah, they were made from poor people's teeth, among other various things. They looked probably horrifying. In fact, they would intimidate Abraham Lincoln if he just showed that. He showed that that glassy smile. There's no way it doesn't, because that is messed up looking, and it's messed up how he got him, and it hurt. It shows his natural toughness. He wore those dentures all the time, despite the fact that they hurt like heck. You got to appreciate a guy who's willing to hurt a little just to look scary.
Hmm. First of all, not to say there weren't professional style matches happening at the same time in that era of the United States. There were, but this is documented real fighting. This is not
a
pro style thing. Now, one thing that Abraham Lincoln did do, which was really smart, is that if he ever needed to gather a crowd, he'd challenge the toughest person in that town. That was about as showy as it got, because he always knew there was a chance he could lose. But again, he only kind of lost once. Abraham Lincoln was a badass, physical badass, 301. Wrestling Hall of Fame, this is a badass. All right, Tommy, listen. Ray's going in some crazy land talk. I'm bringing up really cool facts about an amazing fighter who was also one of our greatest presidents. We're at the turning point, and this is where you use your judgment. Mm-hmm. Forget about Adam West for a second, and tell us who you think is in the lead and what the other side has to do to get the win.
Mm. Well, first of all, James, I really wish you had mentioned that Will Forte did the voice of Abraham Lincoln in the show Clone High, so that I could relate another actor to the president. So that is just a personal point off for you. But looking at the last round of arguments, something changed in me. I had my views of these men. I had pigeonholed them, and I had George Washington as the tougher man, and that has changed. I undeniably, Abraham Lincoln has the pedigree of a fighter, of a brawler. The thing about war and battling is, while you're individually maybe engaging in hand-to-hand combat, it is a effort of many. It is not a singular effort, whereas fighting, combat sports, is one-on-one, generally. So the idea of this being a one-on-one fight, the advantage would appear to be advantage Lincoln at this point. Now, let me just go to my notes. The trash-talking thing was disturbing. It was neither helpful nor hurtful to your case, but it did open a window to the psyche of Abraham Lincoln, which I think is a pretty terrifying place. So I'm looking here. I see George Washington is a man who will fight dirty, but generally probably needs a group of people to be at his most effective in fighting. Abraham Lincoln seems to be a man of great integrity, so he may not have what it takes to finish someone off. So at this point, I'm going to give a slight advantage to Lincoln. Slight, razor thin advantage to Lincoln. The star power of George Washington, Adam West, is looming large in the background. This is, I would say, this is what we would call in a 162-game baseball season, a half-game lead three-quarters of the way through the season. Okay, so there's a lot of time left, a lot of games to be played.
It's fair.
Yeah, you're okay. See, the Adam West is carrying weight with you is what you're saying.
It's not not. It's not not.
I love it. I love it. There's a reason why you're this amazing and will be, you know, the leader of Rochester, New York shortly. Okay, Ray, here's the deal. You know, razor thin lead to me just means we're still kind of tied. You're throwing a lot of weird stuff out there. I'm really hoping you kind of veer back towards George Washington's greatness and what's been, you know, documented.
Absolutely. My point number three is all about the greatness of George Washington.
Then hit me with your point number three.
Point number three, I want to use some historical examples from historical television shows, portrayals, and media portrayals, because I think that's very, very important for understanding this character. See, the actual George Washington appeared on a television show called The Teen Titans, where he got into a fight with Robin, the leader of the Teen Titans, and it was the winner of that fight was to become the new leader of the Teen Titans. And in that particular battle, where he destroyed Robin and made Robin submit and actually became the leader of the Teen Titans, George Washington was shown to jump out of their giant fortress very, very high up in the sky. He used an eagle that flew out. He was able to control the eagle. It landed on his back and was able to fly him around like Falcon from the Falcon and Winter Soldier TV show that isn't out yet. But you know who I'm talking about. He has wingspan eagle flight power. Not just that, Robin tried to shoot a projectile, and then Washington pulled out what's called the Freedom Shield, and he was able to deflect all of the shots of those projectiles. Mm. Not just that, he countered that with what's called the Liberty Punch, which sent Robin flying what must have been 25 stories in the air. Not just that, when Robin tried to return to the battle, George Washington got into a robotic Statue of Liberty called the Monument Mech, and that is what he ended up using, smashed the torch down on Robin, ultimately causing his defeat and taking over the leader of the Teen Titans. But if that historical example doesn't work for you, I have another one. And it's from the historical documentary known as Assassin's Creed 3 DLC, The Tyranny of King Washington. Jeez. Now in this, George Washington, in real life, obviously, because this video games are all reality, George Washington found some sort of weird artifact. It was an apple, but it wasn't really an apple. It was more of a sphere. And it was an artifact that corrupted his soul and made him want to become the king of America. Mm. Not just that, he did it. He built a giant pyramid where the White House was going to be, and he stayed inside looking brutish on his throne that he had created because he had referred to himself as king of the Americas. Now, when he eventually gets fought in the final battle of this historical video game, he has the apple stuck in a scepter, which he can then use to project energy blasts from it. He could also be surrounded by force fields. If he, in fact, sees you coming in the battle, he could actually raise a giant force field all around himself, knocking you backwards. So how is Abraham Lincoln even going to get close when George Washington is throwing force fields around, blowing him out of the air, skying him everywhere there? Not just that. Once he got a couple of hits in, let's just say, for example, Lincoln gets a couple of hits in on George Washington. George Washington produced clones of himself, like dozens of them, all around, all either armed with a musket or armed with the scepter artifact itself, which could then also do energy blasts. So it's much like fighting the Wu-Tang Clan. If you fight one George Washington, you're fighting dozens of George Washingtons if the battle starts going in your favor. So Abraham Lincoln can't even get near him. He's got no answer for energy blasts. And not just that, all the clones are eventually going to get to him. And to finish it off in that battle, they fell through the roof. They fell through the roof. What would be basically falling off the top of a stadium. They fell through the roof of the pyramid, and Washington was able to get up and walk back to his chair at the end of this battle, where he, I think, just fell asleep. That's probably what just happened. But he was able to get up despite every one of his bones in his body being broken. George Washington, corrupted, is absolutely too much for Abraham Lincoln to handle. I've given you two historical, factual examples from the historical Teen Titans and historical Assassin's Creed 3 DLC, The Tyranny of King Washington. I believe I've made my final case here. I think Washington is just too powerful with arcane powers and science-based powers to be defeated, and that's my point number three.
Wow.
What? Okay, hold on. Ray, I'm going to kind of just read between the lines here. Did you run out of points for George Washington, so you decided to do a Teen Titans?
No, James, I was doing what I always do. It's called sandbagging. You save the best points for last, and then you hit like a haymaker, and then I look at this dumb expression on your face in our video chat service, could be anything, and then I see how defeated you look right now, and it brings me such great joy.
You know, a couple of comments. Number one, I just don't think those are actually historical events. But
all of them
and number
happened.
Two, crystal meth's one hell of a drug. And point number three, let's go to our judge, Tommy.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say really, ?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're questioning this, James. I'm a history buff. And yeah. One of the things that my fellow history buffs will I'm sure concur with me is, it's fun to learn things you didn't previously know.
What?
I, yep. Thank in you. My studyings, my range of research, I have never come across the legend of George Washington wielding a staff with an apple-like orb that could give him the power of force fields and energy bolts. I've never heard that. Of course, the cherry tree. I cannot tell a lie. I chopped down the cherry tree. We all know that one.
Sure.
We know about his famous isolationist policies and the desire to make the nation strong without depending on foreign nations. We know about that. But the fact that he was able to wield a giant structure to defeat the boy wonder, that had also escaped my research. So as a history buff and an amateur historian, learning new things is never to be discouraged, even in the framing of a hypothetical battle. So I guess I just urge you to educate me as well if you want Lincoln to have a chance here.
Okay, so Ray, you're really doing this. Is this what you're relying on? Is this correct?
I'm relying on real facts, real history, real examples from the real world, James. I don't know what you're doing.
You know, the I'm hearing crazy talk from Ray. Tommy, okay. The only thing that's crazier than all of this is that for some reason, I kind of expected Ray to do this. So I'm going to toss out my point number three that was built on legitimacy and the historical facts of Abraham Lincoln.
Sure.
And let me bring
How
up a couple
you,
of things.
Sir.
First of all, if you're going to bring up, what was it, the Statue of Liberty mech? I'll bring up, I think, Robo Lincoln in the Destroy All Humans video game. He was also a large mech.
Yeah.
So really, okay, let's keep going. Let's talk about this great documentary. There's been so many amazing documentaries about Abraham Lincoln. Steven Spielberg made one, I think.
There's been stuff
on PBS. I'm sure Netflix has a number of these.
Ken Burns has certainly covered the territory. I've spent many a night on PBS learning about Lincoln.
Masterpiece Theater, by the way, a lovely program as well. I've donated dozens of dollars to their fundraising efforts. Here's the thing. My favorite documentary about Abraham Lincoln came out in 2011. It was called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. And this one, this was just really interesting. It opened my eyes to things. Now, again, it's never been documented that this actually happened, but it's also never been documented that it never happened. So I'm guessing this was based off some like legend because all legends in this have a basis of truth.
Sure.
And this basis is what I'm going to put my point number three on. So the legend has it that after Abraham Lincoln learns that vampires killed his grandfather and his mother and hordes of them were running the South for some reason, he gets so angry that he vows to kill every last one. So he meets up with a friendly vampire by the name of Henry Sturgis, who trains Abraham Lincoln for 10 years in the art of killing and destroying vampires. Now, during this training, Abraham Lincoln became so powerful, he could cut through a tree with one swing of an axe super easy. He became so proficient at fighting and killing that he could take on super powerful vampires that really only had two weaknesses, silver and, the other one was decapitation. And let's just say Abraham Lincoln didn't always have a lot of silver. But luckily, he did have his axe. So just how powerful were these vampires that Abraham Lincoln were dispatching? Well, the vampires were immortal. They were literally immortal to all physical age and diseases and couldn't be killed by mortal means such as gunshots and normal blades. They were practically invulnerable as they could survive gunshots to the head, endure several severe physical trauma and falls of all types. Sunlight didn't bother them all. They were out walking in the day. They were super strong. It's like they could hold the weight of a falling train. That's insanely strong. They could see in the dark, had super hearing. They had incredible super speed and can move faster than the eye could see and outmaneuver like firearms and bullets. And if that wasn't enough, they possessed Spider-Man like agility and reflexes. I'm just throwing that in because Ray loves it when I bring up Spider-Man and compare him to like things that I'm debating right now. And by the way, Abraham Lincoln, he didn't just kill them one by one. He killed them like four to five at a time, especially when he got jumped by like groups of them. He would just dispatch them like no one's business, and he was smiling while he did it. And the, you know, of course, he used silver and all that, but man, he loved decapitating these super powerful, not regular vampires, Tommy. I'm talking super powerful vampires.
Yes.
Look, in the end, when you're facing someone who went from poverty to the presidency through sheer force of will, had a fighting record of 301 and a style that was the forefather to modern day MMA, and someone who could destroy groups of super-powered vampires by cutting their heads off and enjoying every second of it, it's pretty clear that Abraham Lincoln beats George Washington, either in fact or fiction. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my point number three.
Fiction? What are you talking about? That all sounded true to me. I've seen that documentary as well.
It's great.
And yeah, and I got an A in my history class when I brought up the facts of it. So, I mean, I don't know what we're talking about right now. Let me just say... First things first, fantastic. I'm glad that you went for it as far as bringing out the real facts of the real history of this country and none of this BS wrestling stuff that you were trying to throw out there, because as a wrestler, I just happen to know better. The one story that I want to leave you with here, Tommy, is the story of the nobleman who, and this is sort of a this one is not necessarily a true story, but it's an anecdote, so bear with me. But the story goes that there was a gentleman who had British noble over to his house for these dinner parties. And what he did was, you know, they didn't have indoor plumbing at the time, so they had an outhouse. And he went ahead and he put a giant picture of George Washington on the inside door of the outhouse so you could see it while you were inside doing your business. And and he was asked once, why do you have a giant picture of George Washington on the inside of your outhouse, especially for these dinner parties? And he says, because nothing makes a Brit crap himself or want to go to the bathroom more than the sight of George Washington, because they are that terrified of him. The English, the British at the time, were the dominant force in the entire world. And the fact that this anecdote could be told about the most dominant power being afraid of George Washington, especially with those gnarly teeth, I think tells you everything you need to know about this character. Not just that, I didn't really hear James come against force fields, come against energy blasts, and have anything really positive to say about using the Statue of Liberty as a giant mech in order to win the battle. I will leave you with that.
All I got to say to that is that if we're really getting historical about this, Superman and Batman had to call upon a historical figure to help them against some super powerful villain, something that could end the universe. And guess who they chose to fight by their side? It was Abraham Lincoln, who for some reason had superpowers. By the way, Abe Lincoln is actually a Superman-level being in the Image universe that's with Invincible. So there you go.
Keep trying, James. No,
that's
this is
how
point
you beat
four.
Sportsfield.
Struck it from the
you have a superhuman
he's
level.
He's trying to invent new
level.
Points. He's beaten and Abraham he knows Lincoln. It. So let's go ahead and go right to the verdict.
I'm gonna have to side with a little bit of both of you there. I'm gonna have to cut some of that last part out because that was a fourth point. But nevertheless,
these are good points. Now listen. You've heard both sides. I'm not really sure what's happening here. You've heard both sides of I guess these are called arguments, debates. It's now up to you, Tommy. Who do you think wins this battle? Is it George Washington? Is it Abraham Lincoln? Take us through your process and tell us who is the winner.
Yes. Well, you know, as said in Hamilton, a musical featuring George Washington, death doesn't discriminate. It takes. So what I'm looking at here is now that we have these newfound facts about our founding fathers and 16th President Abraham Lincoln, the game has changed. The game has changed because we're no longer doing Mississippi mud wrestling or whatever it was that Abraham Lincoln excelled at, or Ohio Valley tag team loser leave town matches. We're talking about time and space and physics being bent. So I have to look at the vampire slaying against the being able to call upon magical powers. It would seem to me the way to disarm George Washington would be for him to have a momentary lapse of strength or a lapse of focus. No, in the beginning, Ray, when we were dealing with what I would say conventional facts, what I would call mainstream facts, when we were just talking about conventional history, you listed off a series of about 9 ailments that George Washington suffered from. Now, you could try and use the argument that we don't know what version of George Washington, if he is a person who, if he hadn't suffered them yet at the time of this fight, but you did identify that he had them when he was a child. One of the ailments was carbuncle.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other ailments are more severe: tuberculosis, smallpox. Those are things that permanently weaken a person. Those are things that permanently make it difficult for them to have fine motor skills and fine motor functions. Because of that, and because of the fact that this man spent 10 years training and learning how to fight beings with Spider-Man level dexterity, I simply have no choice but to rule that in the thinnest of margins, the winner of this fight is Abraham Lincoln.
And there you have it. Complete outrage. Wow.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. And that's how Abraham Lincoln wins these fights. Someone comes at him with outlandish claims, craziness, stuff that's not factually true, and he becomes a lawyer, figures out how to fight it on that level, and overcomes. The right decision was made. Tommy, I got to tell you, it took me on an emotional journey here, allowing Ray's points. Just the madness we descended to. I don't think we've ever done that before. Wow. Ray,
as a fellow carbuncle survivor, I just simply had to let George Washington be heard in his full glory.
Wow. Ray, I mean, this was the first battle you and I ever had. Are you now satisfied that this battle has been resolved, that, you know, we now have a clear winner? Where's your head at right now?
No, James, I'm not satisfied with this answer at all. Tommy, I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to you. I don't know what happened to us. I felt that point number three was so deeply strong. And the Adam West point doing it, look, I did not suffer carbuncle. So I have to, you know, first off, congratulations. Thank you,
thank you
for your strength. I just want to start there. It has been argued that the smallpox that Washington had when he was young caused him to be sterile, why he had no kids later in life. So I can see a little bit of the weakening argument. I still think it shows that ailments that literally killed everybody back then, again, 8, 9 of them that I said in point number one, the fact that he survived them all shows that he's a survivor. And I think that you completely dropped the ball on that. And I never heard an answer for the Monument Mac Statue of Liberty. I don't even know what to tell you at this point. I feel like I went unheard a little bit in my finest points. I feel like this is the second week in a row that has happened.
Wow.
And I feel a little bit of sadness right now, Tommy. I'm not gonna lie. I would normally be yelling at somebody a lot, but the fact that you allowed me to make my points with my alternative facts and my alternative storylines, I think shows a great decency as a judge. So I'm not mad at you. I'm just disappointed.
I you know what? Get in line. Get in line of the people that are not mad at me but are disappointed. And by the way, while you're in line, meet each other. Make a new friend.
It's all about the friends you make along the way.
That's right. Like Henry Sturgis, the kind vampire that taught Abraham Lincoln how to defeat vampires.
I mean, how lucky was that encounter?
To talk about good timing.
Yeah, it was great.
And a man whose life was riddled by bad timing, at one point he did have good timing.
You know, imagine George Washington commanding an army of Abraham Lincoln vampire hunters.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's craziness right there. See, Ray, I can play that game too.
But seriously, Mary Todd, how did you like the play?
Tommy, I wish you all the best on your journey
to
becoming the king of Rochester. I
appreciate
think you
that.
Will be a benevolent king. You
yes.
will treat the citizens of that fair town very well. You come out and you just bring your A game to the Who Would Win show. Tonight was another example of why you're like such a favorite amongst the fans.
Well,
and you're
pleasure.
Definitely a favorite of mine. Just putting that out there.
Good.
I mean, you are lovely, is what I'm trying to say here.
I appreciate that very much, and right back at you. And Ray,
well, thank you.
I know that we're in a rut right now. I know we're in a rough patch, but you know I love you, and you know that we're just another few months away from another one of these episodes, and it's a new day. It's a clean slate. You know, one thing about me is I always give you a clean slate. I don't bring old grievances from old episodes in, so whatever our next battle is, I want you to know you're getting nothing but a fair trial from me.
Tommy, I would say, for the record, it is impossible to stay mad at you, but it is not impossible to be mad at you.
No.
So I'm going to go ahead and keep this with me for a little while, if you don't mind.
Fair enough.
Ray, I got to tell you, you threw me for a loop. You had me on the ropes for a while. I had no idea that this was something you were going to do. And is this what I can expect in the future? Do I need to keep planning for battles like this?
James, I would be ashamed of you and disappointed in you if you didn't. Mm.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I got to tell you, this was a great matchup. And Ray, you brought it. And, you know, ever since that first day we had that first match in Hamburger Habit, you know, that fancy restaurant in Woodland Hills, where we electrified the group of people who were there during their lunch hour.
It's true.
You know, you have never not brought your A game. You've been fantastic all the way through. And even though I won today's matchup, I feel like I would have won that matchup if it had continued to Hamburger Habit, is all I wanted to say. So, Tommy, with that being said, please tell everyone where they can find you.
You can find me on all social media at Tommy Bechtold. At Tommy Bechtold.
Very cool. Ray, give yourself a hug. Please tell our listeners where they can find you.
Well, you can find me, of course, at Almighty Ray on Twitter. Hashtag Ray was robbed. Guys, you heard what happened here. Hashtag Awkward Allies. Talking to only you right now. The true fans of Hashtag Ray is right. You saw what happened. You saw my dynamic, electrifying, utterly over the top and delightful point number three. And you heard, James, you know, I'm glad you prepped Abraham Vampire Hunter. I wish you hadn't, but you did because you're a prepared combatant in these Who Would Win battles. So, James, I tip my hat to you in that regard, despite the fact that obviously the wrong decision was made today.
I got to tell you, Ray, you bring out the best in me like no one else. So that's something, right? That's like worth its weight in Carvel ice cream.
Maybe we should work out out the lesser in you going forward. Maybe we could give that a go some point.
Sure, we'll give
I'm
that a shot.
I'm tired of having to work so hard, James.
Me too. It goes great. Seriously, it goes both ways. But you know what? We wouldn't be us if we didn't try like that, like research like crazy. Sure. All right, very cool, Ray. Well done again. Hard matchup. It took me everywhere, but it was fun. You can find me, by the way, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by typing in at James Gavsey. Remember to join the official Who Would Win Facebook group to make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and be part of our growing community. You can also find us on Instagram at Who Would Win Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and where else you go for your podcasts. And check out the Who Would Win website at www.whowouldwinshow.com to access all of our past podcast episodes. On behalf of myself, Ray Cicanus, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win team, thank you once again for listening to another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey gang, I hope you enjoyed this episode and love listening to the show as much as we enjoyed making it. Quick reminder that you can support us by going to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Okay, gotta prepare for next week's episode. Hope the rest of your day is full of wins.